Bueno. All right, let's get started. Good evening and welcome to this Dance Dialogue conversation with Jacob Boehm and Maria Randall. My name is Estelle Conley and I am the producer at Lucy Gearin Inc. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that I'm joining today's talk from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, and I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present. I'd also like to extend this to any First Nations people joining us tonight. I have green eyes and shoulder-length brown hair with a fringe. I'm wearing a navy blue turtleneck jumper and I'm using small hot pink headphones. Behind me is a painted white brick wall. Before introducing our artists, I'd just like to run through a few bits of housekeeping for tonight. At the bottom of your screen, you'll notice a chat button. In the chat, we encourage you to let us know where you're zooming in from today. To do this, be sure to select all panelists and attendees in the little blue drop-down menu first. Also, alongside the chat button, you'll find the Q&A button. If you have a question that you'd like the artists to respond to around the themes in today's conversation, simply pop them in there. And later on in the talk, we'll select questions from here to talk to. You can also upvote other people's questions by clicking on the little thumbs up button. This talk is being Auslan interpreted. I'd like to welcome our interpreters, Dave and Sarah. Please also be aware that we are recording this session so that the audio can be published on our website after the chat so people can still access it. So, on to tonight's talk. We're delighted to welcome Jacob and Maria for a deeply insightful conversation about their practice, their long history working together, and the Wild Dog Project. Before I hand over to them, some brief reintroductions. Jacob Boehm is a multidisciplinary theatre maker and choreographer based in Melbourne. He has been creating work for the stage, screen, and for large-scale public events and festivals. Jacob is the founding creative director of Yurrumboy, Australia's premier First Nations arts festival. He is also the writer and performer of the critically acclaimed solo work, Blood on the Dance Floor. Jacob is currently the artistic director of the Wild Dog Project, reconnecting the dingo song lines between South Australia, the Northern Territory, and far north Queensland. Welcome, Jacob. Maria Randall is a Gidabal, Gullabal, and Yagle dance maker from far north Queensland, from the far north coast of New South Wales. She is a NAISDA Dance College graduate and more recently a VCA graduate. Her most memorable achievements have been choreographing Jacob Boehm's Blood on the Dance Floor and producing Yapenya, a new Dja Dja Wurrung ceremony based on old stories. Maria is currently developing her new work System. This work aims to showcase the strength, resilience, and unwavering presence of First Nations women in the face of adversity. Welcome to Maria. And without further ado, I'm going to turn off my camera and hand over to you both.
Hi everyone. Thank you, Estelle. My name is Jacob Boehm. I am a Narunga and Kaurna man. My mob are from the York Peninsula and Adelaide Plains of South Australia. I'm zooming in to you tonight from the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country here in Melbourne. I am a fair-skinned man with bald head and clear-rimmed glasses and kind of the bits of a grey beard coming out. I'm wearing a red jumper and behind me is a bookshelf and over my right shoulder is a bunch of packing boxes, but we won't go into that. I go by the pronouns of he, him too.
Hello everyone, I'm Maria Randall. As Estelle mentioned, I'm a Gidabal Gullabal Yagga woman. Today I'm coming, I'm on a Dja Dja Wurrung country up in Bendigo. And I, yeah, visual description, something I've never done before, but I've got short brown hair with flecks of grey hair in there for the stress of something sometimes now. I'm wearing a blue skivvy, brown eyes, and I'm sitting in a bedroom that's fairly new, and my background is just white with cupboards. It's been really great for Jacob just to invite me into have a yarn with him about the work that he's done, but also just our long relationship that we've had, you know, working, friendship, and the many, you know, journeys and adventures that we've been on, whether that's personally or creatively. And he's obviously got his latest project, Wild Dogs. And wanted to kind of start the yarn with asking Jacob a little bit more about it. Me and him have a lot of conversations around projects, you know, whether we're outside eyes, you know, outside ears, or just a bit of a cultural compass with each other, just to kind of guide one another. And also just to be like springboards off one another about, you know, are we feeling like we're going in the right direction and all those kinds of things. I suppose, you know, just to ask how, you know, where'd all this come from, and the joining of states, of lands, of, you know, like that it's not just in one spot, that it's gone, started someplace, and then it's traveling to all these other places.
So Wild Dog started probably, it was 10 years ago, actually. I'll try and do a truncated version of the origin story of the project. So I'd been asked to direct a commission. These are beautiful images. The images that are accompanying this are images from my country, Noongar country on York Peninsula in South Australia. Enjoy. 10 years ago, I was asked to direct a commission that the Mornington Island dancers were given to open the Cairns Indigenous Art Fair. And I was sitting with the songmen, and we were trying to figure out which major song line that they have that they would have liked to be interpreted into a traditional dance, contemporary dance, puppetry, kind of spectacle, for want of a better word. And we were talking about two of their main lines, storylines. One was Tuatu, which is the rainbow serpent. The other was Narambi, which is the dingo. And one old man turned to me and he said, well, we have his resting song here, but his, you know, this line, this song comes from all the way down from where your mom are from. And I left it at that. Fast forward six years, and in 2017, a couple of my cousins were here for a family barbecue from South Australia. And I turned to my cousin Eddie, and something just popped into my head. I was like, Unc, this old fella up north reckon we got dingo songline down south. I've never heard anyone talk about dingoes, like from Noongar country or Ghana, da-da-da. And Uncle Eddie, without missing a beat, went, yeah, Wild Dog, we call him Warragudly, he's a roaming dog. We've got big storyline, goes up the east coast. And so I went, oh, wow, okay. Then, so that's swimming in the back of my head. And 2 years, fast forward 2 years, and Nikki Cumpston from the Art Gallery of South Australia, who's the artistic director of Tarnandi Festival, was talking to me about ideas that I had. And I went, so I've had this thing swimming around in my head, Nikki, for a couple of years now. There's a beginning of a storyline that I know that comes from our mom, and it goes all the way through South Australia up through Northern Territory and into far north Queensland. Wouldn't it be great if we could start gathering all their mobs together to dance or reinterpret that songline, look at trade routes, look at relationships, and work with the youth of those communities to start looking at how we can, number one, maintain those songlines, those customs and the practices that goes with those stories, but also build contemporary dance and multidisciplinary practice around it, and start working with youth and other artists in many different communities to reinterpret those songs. So Nikki Cumston then gave me some seed funding to go ahead and go forth with that. What ended up happening was that I soon found partnerships with both Country Arts SA and Insight Arts, who are producing Wild Dog, and through and with them, we've managed to get a wonderful raft of support around the project to build this idea of creating a multi-generational, multi-year project that brings all these communities together. So with that, like, we've had, you know, the project now has got quite a lot of partners. You know, we've got Country Arts and Insight, but then we're also being supported by Lucy Guerin, the State Library of South Australia, Point Pierce Council, Narunga Nations, Artback NT, Moondee and Gunnina Aboriginal Corporation, and, you know, funded through Indigenous Arts and Languages, Arts Queensland, Arts SA, Australia Council, Ministry of Culture Taiwan, and City of Port Adelaide in Enfield, you know, so, because we're also collaborating with Asian counterparts. Because one of the things that happened when I first started this one, I started going back to Adelaide and yarning with my elders, was that Uncle Moogie turned to me. He's a Kaurna Ngarrindjeri elder. And he turned to me and he said, you know, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to go into Asia, don't you? And I went, what do you mean? And he went, well, that's where that dingo comes from. He's foreign to us. He come maybe 18,000 years ago. And true to form, yes, he did. And so the DNA of our dingo is found in many different spots through Papua New Guinea, through Indonesia, the singing dogs, into Vietnam, Cambodia, over through to the Formosan mountain dog in Taiwan, and then into southern China. So we're partnering with mob in Taiwan, the Bunun people as well. Blah, 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 that's it.
And no, because and I remember too that when you started yarning about it as well, like when you started going places and you'd meet someone sometimes for the first time, and then, you know, you just start yarning, you go, oh, I'm doing this project about the dingo, and then they go, oh, I've got a story for you. Like, you know, you'd be like telling me, oh, you never remembered, like, I met this person and guess what, you know, like, yeah, that, all that interesting, those links, you know, that when it was time for that opening, everyone else just was making contact with you.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing about this one. So Wild Dog and Dingo Stories, there's a couple of things. So what we're doing is we're bringing the children's versions of these stories, because dingo, we call him Warragudli in Narunga language. Mornington call him Narambi, although there's other names for him as well. And so there's also the public version, which we can tell, which is the children's version, which is what we're doing. There's also some sacred lore attached to this one, which also scares some mob as well. They're like, what are you doing? You're breaking law. It's like, no, 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 no. We're actually working with the children's version, the children's stories around all this. We're not going down that path. But what it does do, because a lot of the dingo stories are all about country, connecting us to country, naming parts of country, and with that, how then we are connected to that country and what those kinship systems are. Mm-hmm. So it automatically, the project is all about connecting us together through this animal.
Yeah.
It travels the expanse of our continent. Because the one thing that I started to follow, which is completely expanded from now, so the line that joins us in South Australia through to Queensland is a two-dog story. There is the three-dog dingo story that goes up the east coast through your mob and into Victoria and into Queensland. Mm. Then there's the seven-dog dreaming that comes from Noongarrbuddja Perth country and then splits all over the country. So a lot of our mob are associated or have connections to this dingo dreaming. And for me, particularly when we started facing COVID and everything, the question around, but it's even before that, these questions around why we gather, how we gather and for what reason, that has kind of driven this whole exploration around gathering, around connecting, around keeping those kinship systems and totemic systems and relationship to country alive.
I know there's probably something for that the near the end, but just, you know, with the load, and you've just, you know, mentioned about how you know, it's not just that thing of where we just create art and then we present it, that, you know, like that there's so many more layers, and, you know, that knowledge of like what you're saying, that we've got to tell the right story and the right version and in the right way and with the right knowledge, and that it's not something that we can just, you can just go out and make, that there's and I suppose that's, you know, part of that reason too of me and you being, you know, and the stuff that we do is it sometimes is not just about creating a performance or an artwork to be presented, that those layers and that responsibility and the obligation and all those things that are there invisibly still stay with us even when 5 o'clock finishes. And so I suppose it's that thing, you know, like of how the juggling of those things and how to, yeah, be safe in all of that when you're doing that kind of stuff. Because, yeah, and obviously, you know, that thing of being able to sit down and yarn and to one another and, you know, to dump, but then also to know where that cultural guide or compass is in all of it.
Well, I suppose that's what you were talking about before, about how, you know, what, we've known each other for 25 or so years.
Is it more like 10 again?
No, I'm only 27.
Yeah.
But we have that whole thing of being able to call each other up, because you've experienced throughout this project the phone calls coming from me when I've had those exciting moments where that thing that's just happened that's gone, oh my God. This thing just came out of the blue, and now it's connected me to this, and now I'm having yarns with that, and oh my God, did you know about this?
Yeah.
To also the phone calls that I've made, which are about, I actually can't deal, you know, I can't deal with the lateral violence that I'm seeing. I can't deal with the stress and the responsibility of this. Maria, get me out of it. Help me get out of here. No, we've often used each other for that kind of shoulder.
Yeah. And I think that's the, you know, and a lot of our yarns too of, and, you know, and it's what we were yarning about the other day too of, you know, that, you know, if you rewound or went back in, you know, 20 years later, the Jacob that, or Maria that was there, would they then be able to do what we're doing today, you know, and that everything that's, you know, all those, being, you know, lucky enough to work across different Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, cultures and country, and then also working within our own. But then, you know, like in this instance, like we've, you know, we worked together on Tandarum, and that's, you know, creating ceremony. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that we were working with, and like none of that's like directly our community or our culture. And so whereas now with Wild Dog, you're actually, you know, you're with your own community, and there's always that, I don't know, like for me, I think sometimes it's not necessarily being, working with your mob is easy, but working with other mob is.
Well, you know what, like, and I have to say that's the thing that has been the most exhilarating and the most, oh God, what's the word? It's been exhilarating in terms of working with my community, working on country, working with my family. But then it's also been, if we felt that, you know how we feel immense responsibility when we've been gifted to hold information and to be able to transfer and translate information for other mobs through their elders and through their communities.
Yeah.
You know, we go into those projects fully aware of that responsibility, but then to have that with my own mob is just a totally different thing altogether. It's not just about being accountable to the community, it's actually accountable to being to your blood, to your direct ancestral line. Mm-hmm. And especially when we're working with this kind of cultural material, the responsibilities are tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
Which I suppose is why you get my late night phone calls when I'm freezing.
And I suppose it's that, you know, that thing too, like, and like from the yarns with you, you're like, you're going, I've met, you know, my auntie from this side, from, you know, and the second time, the last time she met me was this, and you know, that thing of, you know, they always say that our families are big, but, you know, like really when you get into it and you know, there's still family that I haven't met to this day, and, you know, like how that expansion happens in something like this. But I suppose it's that thing too, like that that art or the practices that we've created allow us to kind of, you know, add to building culture, or, you know, reinstating it, and you know, all those things that I think our generation are kind of looking at now, that maybe the couple of generations before us weren't able to do because of the policies and all the things that were in place as well.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because, yeah, I agree.
But yeah.
Also, and we've talked about this before, and I can see in my chat here, I can see the name Dion Hasty. Hello, my brother. But Dion, you, me and Dion are a generation of NASDA.
Yeah.
That was very particular. I think all of us have come out of that generation as practitioners with a very particular slant on how we practice, why we practice, and the kinds of projects that we take on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, or Dion, you can chime in through the chat there if you want. Mm-hmm. What do you think, why do you think we have taken on what we've taken on? Because we don't necessarily go, oh, here, I'm going to do, you know, here's my new dance work, da 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 da. There's all these layers of cultural obligation, complexity, responsibility, maintenance, mentorship, you know, creating pathways for next generation of Indigenous youth, da 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 da. We never, I don't know, it's like we never take the easy road. What do you reckon? What was it about that moment in time back there in the early mid-90s and the way we were being taught?
I think it was, like, especially at NASDA for me, it was just our tutors, like, they were just really, you know, like, and I've never, you know, I can't say I've ever been in another space where, you know, like we'd have, when we're doing Yirrkala and Janet was like, you know, sharing her culture with us, she was, you know, you didn't sit down, you didn't chew gum, you didn't wear socks, you know, and when she spoke, you listened, and, you know, and I think it's, but I think also that, you know, if I rewind, I get a lot of that from my old, like from my grandmothers anyway, like the strength of them and their history that they had to go through as well. And so, I don't know, there was, and yeah, and just the women around my years when I was at NASA were just really strong, staunch women, and that when they walked into a room, you just done whatever they said, you know, like Annie Peggy Patrick. Yeah, Annie Peggy Patrick, you know, Annie Denner and all them mob, you know, like it was just, they taught you and they'd pull you up and just go. Like I remember Janet going one time, it's like, this is my culture. You don't muck around with it. It's not a disco dance that you're learning. It's my culture. And so you need to take it seriously. And so that's something that it always, and even Nanny Peggy, I remember her one time there, now you and Dion, but I think you were there when they were doing the men's dance and the men had to walk in, and, you know, and she was like, no, that's not how you do it. And she got up and she'd done it, you know, and it's like, and everyone else was just sitting there in silence watching, you know, but her doing that, I think it just clicked for everyone. And then all the men come back in the next time, it was totally different. And I think, I don't know, it was just, maybe just more from them just the importance of knowledge and how it's getting transferred, why it's getting transferred, but then also what your responsibility is when you receive it as well. Yeah.
And then I suppose that extends to you know, the things that we take on now, myself with Wild Dog and you with Sisters and all that, and with diversity and all the other kinds of works that you've made as well. That same thing that then applies to how we translate cultural material and that responsibility into like contemporary interventions.
Yeah.
The, yeah, how do you, other than, you know, the midnight phone calls,
yeah.
What is, what do you think, what, do you want to give us an insight into how you process that? Because I, you know, I know that you can't just go into a, you know, I've had some creative conversations with my, with the team, Wild Dog team lately.
Mm.
It's all been about, no, we can't do that because we can't, yes, we're telling the children's version of it, but we can't make it juvenile. There still has to be a reverence for the information that we use. This all relates back to X, Y, and Z. How do you... What about, how do you translate all of that? What's...
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I think it's that thing again of... because I think I use my dad a lot as well. Like, he's kind of another person that I'll just call and go, you know, like, just to give me a gauge as well around it. And, yeah, like, I think it's just... yeah, listening to him, but then also like, and that's what I've started doing too, is obviously working a lot more with Indigenous women, and also just listening to the women and the knowledge that's in the room as well. And I suppose that it's always, you know, and as you more knowledge you get and all those kinds of things, there's that thing of, yes, having the information and sharing it, but I don't know, like, if still knowing what's mine to share and what's someone else, what, you know, so that I'm not talking or yarning on behalf of someone else, but that I'm, you know, yeah, and that's where it's, I think, you know, then becomes that line of going, because we do that thing of, for me, it's that thing of, I've got to find ways within my contemporary practice to inject my culture, because that's the majority of what it is that I do, you know, like, I dance and I have a dance practice, so I can't just be making dance and not be conscious of that knowledge that's there as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
I get it.
Yeah.
It's about having those... yeah, it's about having those circles of cultural authority that keep... The not just one circle, it's like this continued, like a rings on a tree, in a tree, there's these circles of communication and cultural authority that you constantly have to be checking into at all different levels, so that you understand where you are within that, and what it is that you're freely able to express and what it is that you can't express, to what it is that you have to get permission.
Yeah, exactly. All of that with it. Yes, and it does. And that's why, just, you know, that thing of, like, similar, like, what, going back to what we yarned about before, but, you know, that thing of going, it's not just about the lights, the costumes, the music. There's all this other invisible stuff that just, you know, it's just as important as all those other things. But, yeah, like, if, so that, yeah, the weight sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I think the weight of all that, the extra, or not the, you know, like, not the extra, but of just going, we've got to make sure that, yeah, cultural obligation, responsibility, and permission and all those protocol stuff are in place before we even step out onto some, any space for, you know, public consumption. And yeah, just of how that all gets, not juggled, but, you know, of the time and the space needed to have that be present when we're making things.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I don't, yeah, I don't think not a lot of people that I think a lot of Indigenous mob have to, you know, that's at the forefront of what they do. But
I think yes, especially, I mean, I've found myself in this at moments in this project sometimes often questioning myself about what it is that we do and what we continue to do, because it's the amount of time that we invest in consultation and seeking permissions that I do sometimes go, you are an independent man with free will. Why do you choose to do this? But then sometimes, and I know this sounds weird, but then sometimes it's that thing between, yeah, we choose to do it, but then it's that thing of going, well, I think someone's chosen us, like it's like the tap on the shoulder. It's like, well, if you're the one that's going to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this, you know, there's been a trajectory of projects that we've both done, either together
or
as our independent practice, that has been building up a significant knowledge bank to be able to take on some of these bigger projects like Wild Dog. Like for me, and I know I shouldn't, whether I say this out loud or not, but Tanderan was a really good training ground in terms of taking the knowledge that we learned about that.
Yeah.
Because that was raw.
Yeah.
Ceremony from when you don't have much to start. I mean, let me rephrase that. There was a lot, but it was just needed to be uncovered and rethought. And I think it was those processes, as sometimes painful as they were, was such a bloody good training ground to build up some level of resistance. Was it resistance or resilience? To be able to take on some of these bigger projects like a Wild Dog.
Yeah. And I think it's that thing too, though, like of, you know, with the, and, you know, it was good in that sense that Tanderan kind of continued as well, and to kind of actually put things in place, you know, like that the thing of, you know, gathering knowledge and how that gets done and, you know, so, and then how, that gets put into the space, and you know, all those kinds of things of how you know, even just that just, you know, like how we even just getting research for songs, you know, it was about looking at words, but then it was also talking with elders and talking with communities and, you know, getting their knowledge around that as well, so it wasn't always just taking from books, you know, and so that then again, it's not just one form, it's like various forms of drawing information and also that, you know, in our communities there's different versions of stories as well. And so, and when you're actually in the room and you go, similar to, you know, Wild Dog and Dingo, that you go, oh, I've got this version of this story, and then someone goes, yeah, but have you heard this version? Because this is from, you know. And so I think that, yeah, having that kind of process in the space and then going, okay, so for us to do it at least that's respectful, we have to do it in this way, you know, and even just gathering together and acknowledging we all come from different parts of our uncovering and the learning of our cultures, you know, we're all, you know, in somewhat students for that, and so we have to acknowledge that in place, so we put a process in place and a protocol around that, you know, to make those things present so that then when, you know, we go on to do other stuff, there's a this thing that's been created to you know, to safeguard and to, you know, the people, but then also the knowledge that's been shared with all of it. So, yeah. But and that's what I think too, like I've got to also just mention like blood as well, because that was, you know, I remember going back thinking, you know, that thing of you going, how do we put, you know, Black dramaturgy in this? How do we speak in the voices that we speak? How do we tell stories the way that we tell stories, you know? And so sometimes it may not have made sense in your traditional dramaturgy, but then when, you know, just sitting around Yang and going, yeah, but we wouldn't say that, or we wouldn't, you know, like that wouldn't be our thing, you know, and of having, and I know that, you know, one of the goals that you wanted with Blood was to have a primary, you know, Indigenous creative team, and, you know, to have the director, the music director, the writer, a co-director and artist and, you know, movement director all be Indigenous. Like, I think that there is, and I've said that to you before, like there's that shorthand of information that you just go, I want it to be like this because of this, and everyone just goes, like, you know, that whole thing with the chess thing, and you didn't need to explain that. It's just like, that's how it is. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, and that there's that shorthand of knowledge, so then you move on and you create where you should, and then, oh, yeah, anyway, I feel like I'm blabbing now, so... But yeah, but I remember that the way in which that was being created, yes, was in the traditional, you know, in a room, all those kinds of things. But I think the thinking and the processes around it was very different to the way that we'd normally created stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, of course. I think, and I remember in that one, I had to start thinking of, in terms of being the writer of that work, and working with dramaturgs, you know, worked with some fabulous dramaturgs, but in order for us to be able to sink our teeth into it culturally, I had to shift the way I thought about playwriting and the way I was trained to write, mm-hmm. into more like being, and remember it was more like being, okay, let's turn this into song cycles, and it was about becoming a song man, not a playwright.
Yeah.
And actually writing, so that if we were doing one or two song cycles, it was about breaking up all of those things into the episodes that could, yeah, be slotted here and put in over there.
Yeah.
Whichever way it went, it would make sense in its entirety.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, it was, but it is. I think it's that thing too. Like even just the and like even for like that start opening dance, you know. And I'm sure you, going, this is, we're actually, we're not going to do the numbers. You're going to actually tell the story of what you're doing. So it's a word. So you're doing this. You're doing. Then you're going to do that. Then you're going to do that. And you're going to do that. So it's not, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then repeat it. But it was, yeah, like, and I can't imagine it would have been easy. But you've done it so deadly. But yeah, just that thing of how to, and because when James created the music, like we never, it was kind of really like a wide soundscape. So there were points of where you could hit in, but not necessarily that, you know, constant, you know, beat that was always in the background to inform stuff. So yeah, like even just trying something like that, and it, yeah, it may have looked easy, but I know it was really hard in that, just that thing of changing your brain, going, I'm not counting, I'm actually going to tell a story while I'm moving.
And that's, I think, yeah, it's the changing the brain and being able to create spaces for more Indigenous artists to work like that, because it wasn't easy, eh?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of,
yeah, no.
Being, okay, so the challenge for us as creatives is to place Indigenous dramaturgy at the forefront of our thinking. And especially, I think, what was challenging in that position, and it challenges me still today, is, you know, you and I are both VCA trained as well as NASDA trained.
Mm-hmm.
So from NASDA, we got a really good foundation in the principles behind culture, cultural performance, cultural maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
BCA, we started to learn more about Western theatre, Western theatre contexts, how to read, how to critique, how to da 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 da. But then I think what also comes with that, and also being the fact that, you know, I didn't grow up on my country. Mm-hmm. I come from a mob that have a broken line of customs. Particularly around song and dance and ceremony. So I've grown up as a fair-skinned kid in the western suburbs of Melbourne, you know, aiming to get a job and a bank account and a mortgage and da-da-da-da, but then to go into a space as Indigenous artists with other Indigenous artists and go, okay, we're going to place Indigenous dramaturgy first. What we need to do is first then, and I found it hard, I don't know about you, but then what you need to do is acknowledge how assimilated you are.
Yeah.
The assimilated mind that we bring into the room.
Yeah.
And that's fucking hard.
Yeah.
I remember, especially around blood, there were moments where we were all walking through the swamp.
Yeah.
Who am I? What am I?
Yeah.
Am I even average? What do I know?
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's part of a significant part of the practice as well, of kind of going, well, you know, like we live in a generation where we now can look and research our language, we can now look and research our dances, we can, you know, do all those kinds of things, and we can sit down, you know, with our elders for the information that they know. And I don't know, like I've just, and it's, yeah, just kind of going, well, however long I live, I want to at least have, I always keep saying I want to have my own PhD in my culture as yeah. well, because if you know, we're studying every day to have these knowledges and these PhDs in other places, and so however long that I remain on this earth, every day I want to be able to be learning about my culture and Aboriginal Australia culture, so that, I don't know, yeah, as my 15-year-old nephew said to me at the time, he's now 21, he said, Animia, I think when I'm an elder, I want to be able to have the knowledge. If I make it to be an elder, I want to be able to have the knowledge that I can give to my community. And so I was just like, oh, wow, that's pretty full on. But, yeah, like of how you do that, and because it is dance, how do we do it through our practice, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what's becoming more, as I get older, becomes more urgent, and especially as I'm finding with Wild Dog, is that when I've gone into different communities, like, you know, Narunga, with my own mob, Narunga mob, we're using this to revive song and dance.
Mm.
In other communities that we're working with, this project has been an opportunity to not revive song and dance, is actually to maintain it. And through a lot of it has been by creating youth programs. So, you know, we started working, we did a children's exchange with the Central York School, working with the kids roughly between 13 and 15 years old, taking them and getting them to walk this dreaming story on Narunga country. Now, York Peninsula is not that big, but half these kids hadn't even explored their country outside of Maitland or Point Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
So to take them an hour and a half down to the bottom end and show them the beach was like this whoa to all of them, and then to be able to walk them along that dreaming track and teach them about their responsibility to country was huge. So out of this project have come all these offshoots. I don't know why I'm talking about this, but I think that you know, Neff there has just reminded me of working with the kids.
Mm.
Out of this has come, with our dingo story, with our Warragudli story in Narunga country, he will lead us all, because we're salt water, we're surrounded by salt water.
Yeah.
We're a peninsula. But he will lead us to all these water holes where you can get fresh spring water.
Yeah.
I think dingo has a lot to do with water as well. And so now when we took them to all these watering holes to look at it and go, okay, so the cultural practice of maintaining these water holes has been lost for a couple of 100 years now. So out of this has come all these land care and environment programs that we're now starting to build completely away from this project, but as a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
You're
right.
Yeah.
So, no. But how was it? How was it taking them down, and like how was them? How were they like when you like on that beat? Like, yeah.
Oh, look. I think it was it was one of the most stunning examples of the work that we and other people do where we choose to place our culture first. And because, you know, the constant, getting the PhD in our culture, and being able to create create spaces where that exchange can happen to a next generation. It was a stunning example of that because, you know, I mean, I had teachers at that school say, because we would go in 2 days a week and we made a deal with the principal to pull all the Noongar kids out of their classes and have one big class, and then we could, as Noongar artists and elders, do a whole program with them based around Noongar culture and interpreting it through different art forms, but then also that cultural education.
Mm-hmm.
Had heaps of teachers go, you know, we only, these kids, a lot of the kids that you're teaching only turn up on a Tuesday and Wednesday. We don't see them for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
I was like, well, there you go now. Isn't that an argument for two-way learning? Fuck me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Estelle popped up there. Like, is that
I did. That's your cue. I'm going to move into a Q&A now. So a couple people that are listening have submitted some questions. If you do want to submit a question, it's not too late. Just pop it into the Q&A box and we will get to it. So the first question is coming from Fani Townsend. Says, hello, Jacob and Maria. After you've created works that you've loved and have been really attached to through to its inception, how do you let go of that work emotionally after its season has ended?
I think it's, for me, it's that thing of it, the normal, you know, your hype, the adrenaline, then you drop. But I don't think I ever let it go. Like, I always, for me, it's a version of something. And I think it's, again, similar to those songs or whatever, that it stays with me. And then one day I just find another iteration of it. Like, it always just remains. Like, yeah, it doesn't, I don't think anything that I've created, I've just kind of let it go. That there's always been something that I've learned or, you know, something that I want to kind of continue to unravel, or I've found something that I need to have, get more knowledge from, and all those kinds of things. Like, there's the normal, obvious, you know, show high, low, but then it's, majority of the time it's a reflection. And so I'm more of a spirit, arrowhead to kind of go, I need to do this more or that more.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I don't think it actually goes.
Mm.
As I've gotten older, I've gotten more attuned and more used to building up the armor that you need to be able to do the post show, you know, the post show depression, the post show. Because it's just the cycle of it, isn't it?
Mm.
But there is that theory, that most of us as artists. There is a theme or there is an inquiry that will be a constant thread throughout our career. It's just, it's almost like you're making the same work, but in different formats as you start to learn more, discover more, create more meaning around what it is that you've discovered and then have expressed it in different ways. There's that theory that we're all just asking we ask the same question of ourselves throughout our careers. But in terms of handing over some works, I don't know, I'm a typical Sagittarian. I kind of like to hand them on because there's always something else to do.
I've got a question from Denise Wilson. Thanks, Denise.
Hey, Denise.
Hi, Jacob and Maria. Jacob, this current project you are working on is huge and seems to get bigger as it goes along with each location and story you hear. When starting, did you ever think how big it would be and what is next with this work?
I had an inkling just by the fact that, you know, we're looking at an expanse of country from the bottom end of South Australia all the way to the tip almost of Australia. Like, that's a huge expanse of country where these storylines go. And that's just one of these storylines or songlines, if you want to call it that. So I had an understanding, Denise, as you might imagine, of its epic nature. I didn't understand Or the how epic the journey is. I didn't understand the epic nature at the time, but how epic it is within each community, and what needs to happen and the care that needs to happen with each particular point along the way. And that's only within Australia. We haven't even gone into Asia yet, really. What we've had to do recently is that I made the call, and it was only last week, that we were going to do an in-person gathering with the communities that we're working with as part of Tarnindi Festival. It was going to be a big ceremony, theatrical ceremony, a whole kind of different gathering of events all together. But since the Delta variant came out, and well, just listening to colleagues yet again express their disappointment in cancellations or postponements, I made the executive call about scrapping all about plan A, B and C and going straight to plan D, which means in November now, we've pushed our dates back a month because Tarnindi goes for 3 months from October through to Jan. We're now going to present this, and we've got all of our communities filming all the content that we would have performed live, but now we can perform it on our own country and or countries, film it, and then I'm working with a team of designers to create an interactive installation that you can walk through. So you can walk the story through the space by looking at all of these works that everyone's made from Mornington to Taiwan to Narunga or Ghana country. That will then form, and then we can also place it on a digital platform so more people can reach it. We get to preserve the work, and then that also then becomes an invitation to more communities to join. Because from 2022, hopefully, or 23, that's when we can start gathering in person and start singing this story together.
Great, thank you. And another question that came through earlier, the demands of the Wild Dog Project reach deep into the personal and emotional for the artists and extend into the distant and recent past, the present and an aspirational future, and combine with other unhealed, ongoing and past trauma. Can you talk a little bit about how we support and prepare artists that are making these types of projects?
Ooh. Maria, do you want to have a go at that one?
where to start? No.
How does one?
I think it's part of acknowledging and just, you know, really like that you're not, again, like what I was saying before. And sorry, hello, Sunny Townsend. I didn't realise I've just seen your name in the thing too, and to Nayoka as well. Hello, Yuma and Priya too. I think it's just acknowledging and really kind of, you know, like we're in processes where, you know, the decolonizing a process. And so I think that thing of going that the onus is on the Indigenous mob or the mob that have been colonized to decolonize, but at the same time, like there's in that instances, I think there's that the flip side of it of people going, yeah, well, you've got to actually decolonize your process as well, because you're not just working to create an artwork that's going to go on stage or on a wall or anything else, that there's a lot more kind of thinking and you know, like of, and whether that's, you know, again, it's that thing. And I think, you know, Jacob's found it with Jason and Insight Mob is that when you do, it's not just I'm going to produce you for a project, that there's an ongoing, you know, it's got to be ongoing because you've got to share that knowledge and there've got to be that understanding and the learning and all those kinds of things for that to happen. But people got to be open to that kind of process. And that it's, yeah, that the traditional kind of frameworks that are in place now fund a work. They don't fund the other things that come with it. And so I think it's, and again, it's, yeah, the question's bigger than you know, like the system, all those other things around it. But, yeah, like I think that there's a lot of, I'd put the responsibility back onto people that want to do produce these kinds of work again of going why and what's your intention of working with the artist to, again, knowing, you know, all those things that Jacob and I have mentioned, that that actually comes into the mix of working with us entails.
And then putting, I think, some processes in place, and maybe it's also using your position as a presenter or a producer to advocate within the systems that exist, because we've been banging on about this for years, about as Indigenous artists, these are the responsibilities and these are this is the baggage that comes with us into our projects. And we're going to need processes where we're able to fall, where we're able to fail, where we're able to get angry, where we're able to let rip, where we're able to cry. Because a lot of the time, lateral violence is real. Walking into these spaces, and sometimes because we're playing with cultural material and because we're playing so closely with spirit, that we do place ourselves in, you know, tenuous places somewhat, that those spaces, whether you want to call them culturally safe, you know, somewhere to be able to escape to and cry, somewhere to be able to escape to and be able to fall and, like, go, I need the week out now. I need to recoup. But I think, I mean, and it is, it's all just health and well-being. It's mental health and well-being. It's all that kind of stuff that's becoming buzzwords now in our industry, but we've been talking about it for ages. I think there's a lot of stuff that, you know, non-Indigenous presenters and producers and funding bodies could do to actually start making movement to put these processes in place so that they are funded. That is part of the project. Does that make sense? Or have I just talked shit?
No, it does. And I also want to add too that it's that, and you know, from what we've been yarning about, it's that thing of cultural, you know, revitalization, cultural maintenance, and all those kinds of things that, again, like just, you know, clocking that artists, Indigenous artists, are part of that process. And again, like, with, yeah, that, you know, we are taking on something that our elders weren't able to do, you know, or our parents weren't able to do, and that's only one generation ago. And so, like, the weight of even that as well, like, I don't know, it's just, yeah, until some, yeah, opens their mouth and they're listening and they're doing all that stuff, that then maybe things can change. But if it's always on or up to us to create the systems to then for us to step into, then, yeah, anyway, I don't know if I've just done everything, but anyway, yeah.
Hey, thank you for that. Thanks for that comment, Anthony. Thanks for joining us. Thanks.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our conversation, as much as I'd like it to keep going. I might just read out Anthony Hamilton's comment because I think it sums it up nicely. Thanks, Jacob and Maria, for your generosity in the talk. Really fascinating learning about the heritage of the dingo extending into Asia. Look forward to seeing where this story goes.
Oh, we love you too, dear.
So I would also like to just say a massive thank you again to Jacob and Maria for your generosity and your candidness over the last hour. It's been really fascinating to listen to you, and I look forward to listening to the recording so I can dive into it even deeper later down the track. I also want to say a big thank you to everyone that's joined us tonight for the talk. I really hope that you got as much out of this conversation as we did. A big thank you to tonight's Auslan interpreters, Dave and Sarah. Really appreciate you being here. And finally, if you have any feedback on tonight's session or the dance dialogue series in general, please shoot us an email to admin@lucygearaninc.com. It's always really helpful to receive input from our wider community. So I thank you in advance for sending through any feedback. So that's all from us for this evening. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you all soon.
Thanks, Estelle. Thanks.
Thank you.